listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 71 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and this week you're going to hear from Allison Weiss. Allison is an indie artist that has a lot in common with most of us in the indie music community. She can't tour that much because she's still in college, and of course there are the limited financial resources to put into making music. But regardless of these typical indie artist challenges, Allison has taken her love of communicating over the internet and creative promotion ideas and developed a dedicated fan base. And her fans believe in her so much, they actually paid for the production of her most recent project. I know you're going to enjoy my interview with Allison Weiss, so let's get to it right now. Well, on the phone with me is Allison Weiss. Allison, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you're another one of my my Twitter friends or people that I've met sort of over Twitter. You listened to the podcast, and I saw you talking about it one day, so I started following you. And then I started seeing all these cool little indie artist DIY promotion things that you were doing online on the internet that seemed to be really working and having a good response from your fan base. And so I thought, I need to get Allison on the show. These are some good ideas. She needs to talk about it. So here you are.
Here I am. Yeah, that's when I turned to the nearest person next to me, and I was like, oh, my God, I think I'm going to be on my favorite podcast. They're like, your favorite podcast is a DIY music podcast? And I'm like, I know. I'm all about learning.
That's what podcasts are for. That's what I enjoy about podcasts. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your music, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, let's see. I'm 22 years old. I've been playing music for, like, I guess the past 3 years now. I've been really serious about it. But I started in high school like everybody did, playing in really terrible bands. And then I got more into it as I came to college. And somewhere between then and now, like, it stopped being a hobby and started being the only thing that I actually cared about. And I've always had this, strong interest in promotion as well, so that's sort of gone along with my music, which I guess is why you have me on the podcast today. But my music itself is very catchy and upbeat, but also, like, kind of about sad things, because all I can really write about is love and relationships. So if you like the kind of songs that are about breakups but somehow make you feel really good at the same time, then that's my music that I make. So there's that.
And it's important to note that you are a kind of a singer-songwriter, acoustic artist,
yeah.
But you do have a band on your albums, correct?
Yeah, I do have a band on my albums, and I have a band whenever I play in Athens, but unfortunately the guys I play with now can't really travel with me, so if I'm not in my hometown, I'm usually acoustic, but I'm still pretty fun to watch, or so they say.
Well, before we start talking about some of your internet promotion ideas, on episode 69 of the podcast, our friend Ryan, who sat in with us, I don't know if you've heard this episode yet, but he was talking about how a band told him that their goal was to get signed by an A&R guy and get on the radio. And I was just kind of curious from your perspective what some of your goals are. As you know, in the podcast, we thought it was surprising that a band even still had that as their main goals. And you being a little younger than myself, and you're probably more beyond the record label era, I'm just curious what some of your goals are with your music.
Yeah, I hadn't listened to that episode yet. It's in my list of things to do. I think I started listening last night. But I'm excited about it because that does sound a little weird to me that there are still people out there who are like, I got to get signed to a label. I got to get on the radio. I don't really know you know, where I want to end up, if I want to be on a record label or if I want to try and do the DIY thing. But the main goal is obviously to get as much exposure as possible. One thing that I really want to work towards, you guys actually talked about in the podcast before that, which was TV and film licensing, mm-hmm. which is definitely, like, where I think that music can be the most successful nowadays. Because, like, if you get your song at a pivotal moment in the right TV show, you know, the sales and the fans can totally skyrocket, and next thing you know, you're playing sold-out shows all across the country. So,
yes, I've said this before on the podcast, but almost all of our mega top sellers at CD Baby are artists that may not even be household names, but they've had a very crucial song placement in a show where it really made the scene and people went out and bought it in droves. So you're correct. That does really catapult sales.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, like any other artist, my goal is to make money playing music so that I can make more music. So however that happens, I'll take it and run with it. But, I mean, as of now, I'm just kind of, like, trying to do the most I can by myself until I need someone else, until the right person comes along who believes in what I'm doing in the same way that I believe it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're definitely on the right path, because let's talk about what you did with Kickstarter, because I think that's a good segue into how you're generating income in order to pay for your music that didn't require you to, you know, do what bands had done traditionally in the past, where they, you know, go take out a loan or sign with a record company just so they can make the record that they want to and have that backing. But you used a service called Kickstarter, and it's at kickstarter.com that allows you to basically take donations and allow your fan base to pay for your album. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how Kickstarter works and then how it worked for you?
Okay, well, I first discovered Kickstarter back in April, I think it was, when a friend of mine used it to start a book project. And I think at this point, Kickstarter had been around for like a week or two. And so I got an invite, and I decided I was going to raise money for my album. And I was actually really nervous about it, because I feel like if you start a Kickstarter and you get all excited and then it fails, it's probably really, really discouraging, you know?
Yeah.
So I set my goal at $2,000, because I figured, well, if I can just cover the cost of pressing the record, that'll really, like, make a dent in you know, what it's going to cost me. So I set a goal for $2,000, and I made this little video of me, like, playing a song about needing the internet's help to my CD, and then I came up with all these prizes. Like, for the lower donations, you get, like, your name on my website and stuff, and you get digital downloads of the album or actual downloads of the album. And then as it goes up higher, there's more things, like limited edition T-shirts, and for, like, $300, I would record any five of my songs acoustically and make a little mix CD for you and, like, hand-color the cover. And then for, like, $500, I would write you a song. And there was even a super high one that nobody donated to. It was, like, $2,500, and I'll come play in your city. But why would anyone ever want that? And anyway, it was crazy because I set it at 2 months, legitimately thinking it was going to take me 2 months to raise $2,000. And I ended up hitting my goal in about 10 hours, I think.
Wow.
Which was insane. And then over the course of the next few days, I doubled it. And then over the course of the summer, it slowed down, obviously, but I ended up raising $7,400 total, and I now have to write two songs, one for a girl in Australia, one for a guy in North Carolina. I have to make a few mixtapes.
Wow.
Print some T-shirts. I have a lot of work to do, but what's cool about it is not only did it end up paying for the pressing of my record, but it totally paid for the cost of the recording as well. And I have a little leftover that I think I'm going to use for a music video type project. But
wow, so
it's been amazing.
So when you're using a service like Kickstarter, people can donate whatever they want, and you just kind of set different levels. And if, you know, they reach that, if someone wants to donate, what was the brightest song? Was it $1,000?
It was $500.
$500. So you had some people donate $500. Wow.
Yeah, I had two. Actually, one guy donated $600, which wasn't even a level. He just added $100 on at the end. He's amazing.
When the time period ends with Kickstarter, how do you collect from that point on?
Well, basically, I mean, the way it works from the start is you set these levels, and then people can pick their donation level, and they get that prize for that level. And nobody actually pays any money until the final date.
Oh, okay.
And also, you can't get your money until the final date. So, like, I started mine in May, but it wasn't done until August 1st. So all these people basically make pledges, and they enter their credit card information through Amazon.com, so it's all really legit. And then when August 1st rolls around, then everyone gets charged. And, of course, there's a few people whose credit cards get declined and stuff like that. And so Kickstarter makes it really easy for you to message those people and be like, hey, would you mind putting in a new credit card just in case? Or not just in case, but, you know, putting in a new credit card so that you can still get your cool prizes that you want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there were, like, a couple people where it didn't go through, but it was only, like, $5 or $10 donations. It wasn't anything that would ever deter me from doing Kickstarter. And then what they don't tell you, I think, on the website, on Kickstarter, is that it takes, like, a couple weeks for Amazon to process the payments.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to leave yourself a little extra time. Like, don't make your goal be the day before you need to pay for your album. Like, yeah, that would be a really bad idea. But it's pretty amazing to, like, look at your bank account and see all that money in there, and you're like, wow, this totally worked. It's crazy.
Wow, that is very cool. Not only did it work, but it has to be pretty encouraging for you to be able to finish the album, but it kind of takes your music to the next level, thinking, you know, this is the real deal. I mean, people are expecting this now, and I've got to deliver.
Yeah, definitely. Because, yeah, I mean, everyone wants their prizes. What's cool about it, too, is that, like, where in the past, I guess, you'd take out a loan and make your album, you know, and you're very excited about it as a band, and then you have to start telling your fans that you have it, Kickstarter kind of, like, gets your fans excited about it before you even have a product.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've recorded this album, and I'm getting ready to press it. I just finished album artwork today, and there's already, like, at least 196 people out there who are really excited to hear it. So that's cool. And what's great about Kickstarter, too, is it's such a new thing that it's really interesting to, like, press people publicity and all that stuff because it's so new and it's innovative. And so instead of just being another band recording an album, you're suddenly a band who raised all this money from their fans to record their album, which makes you more exciting to write about.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of press from that, which was very cool.
So does Kickstarter take a cut of some of the donations in order to cover their cost, or how does that work?
When I did Kickstarter, they didn't take a cut. I think now there's something where it's like $5 to start a project,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. I'm not exactly sure what it is. And I spoke to one of the guys at Kickstarter, and I think they might start charging in the future. But the numbers he was telling me were really, really small, and it's the kind of cost that you could just factor into your total
mm-hmm.
goal that you want to make and just cover your costs that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Well, I'm excited to hear the album, and it sounds like you got to spend even more money on the album than you even expected in the first place.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was like, it took a huge weight off my shoulders because I wasn't sitting in the studio being like, come on, let's go, let's get it done. So it was like, we can take an extra hour to make sure this is the right guitar tone, you know?
It makes a world of difference, I can say that much. Well, yeah. I know a lot more of these sites are going to be popping up, and I've checked out Kickstarter's website, and it looks like a really cool service, but I know that there's probably a lot of artists that are listening right now that are thinking, yeah, sure, I'll go sign up at Kickstarter and no one will donate. So there obviously was some motivation and already a built-in fan base that really believed in your music before that. And that's an important part of doing any sort of fundraiser. And
definitely.
And I think you're really good at connecting with people on the internet. And so I kind of want to talk about what you're doing with your internet promotions and why you think that you've developed such a rabid fan base that is really eager to help support you, you know, in the process of making a new album. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing, kind of promotions you do on the internet, where you've kind of focused your efforts, and then later on we'll talk about some of your touring efforts as well.
All right. Well, right now, a lot of my efforts on the internet are focused on Twitter, which I think is great because it takes little to no effort. I always tell people who haven't joined yet, I always ask them if they like to text message, which everyone likes to text message. And if you can text message, you can update your Twitter. And it's so awesome. I personally love the internet a lot, as you can probably tell from my Twitter and following me on there. I think I got really into it because I am in school, and so I can't tour constantly. And so I take advantage of the fact that there are all these websites out there that I can use to connect with my fans. Basically, I'm just, like, very enthusiastic about all of my online promotion efforts. And not necessarily promotion, but, like, I just like to be there and, like, hang out, I guess, so to speak, with, like, the fans and people listening to my music. Because it's fun, and I like to, like, connect with people, as lame as that sounds. But I think the reason that it's so effective for me is because I'm very honest and open. And if you follow my Twitter, you know that it's not all just like, hey, I've got a show coming up, come to my show, or hey, you should buy my album, or hey, you should buy my t-shirts. And that sort of stuff is all like in there amongst other updates, you know, like going out tonight, having a blast, or like, I just took a test, I think I failed it. Or, you know, other things like that. I'm really honest and open because that's how my music is as well. Like, if you listen to my music, I'm pretty, like, hard on my sleeve. And so I try and be like that online. And people have told me that I'm entertaining and that I'm funny. So I guess I believe them. And people say that I'm good at Twitter, so I guess I believe them there too. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be sitting here like I'm so funny. I am such an entertaining and interesting person. I don't necessarily feel that way. I just kind of like be myself, and it works. So I trust it.
Was that something you consciously thought about when you started using Twitter and using it to promote your music? That you thought I want to be as real as possible, or is it just something that happened naturally?
It definitely just something that happened naturally. I joined Twitter like a year ago, and I never used it for anything except for my show updates. And then I actually got really into it one night when I decided that I was going to live tweet the Grammys, which was ridiculous, but really super fun because I updated it like every 4 seconds with what my opinion was.
Yeah.
And I already had a lot of followers at that point who had just found me randomly, and people were like, hey, this is great. You know, I don't even have to watch the Grammys. This is hilarious. Other people, of course, were like, you're tweeting too much. But it was the people who were having fun with it, like I was, that kind of got me into it. And that's when I decided, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot. I'm going to really use Twitter. I'm really going to update it, like, the same way that I would update a Facebook status or something like that. And since then, I've totally fallen in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've done a lot of cool things with it. And one thing I wanted to highlight on the podcast was some of the Twitter contests you've done, which I thought were a great idea, and something, like you mentioned, an artist like yourself who can't tour much because you're still in school. But there's a lot of artists out there who can't tour on a consistent basis for various reasons who could probably learn from this. But I really thought the photo contest idea you did was great. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I did this contest sort of at the beginning of the summer. It was to celebrate getting 1,000 followers, and so I decided for a week I was going to have this contest where every day I would tweet 3 items, like a book, a dinosaur, and the color red. And then somebody would have to tweet me a photo involving these 3 items, and then the most creative one would win a CD, and then the 2 runner-ups would get download cards. And it was really super fun, and I made a little website. I used a blogging site called Tumblr to make a little website where I showed the photos, and I posted everyone's Twitter handle. And so it was really cool because people got really creative with it, and I got some really fun photos and sent out a bunch of CDs. And then at one point I even noticed people tweeting back and forth to each other like, hey, I saw you entered that Alice in Wise photo contest. I loved your picture. That was great. And that is my favorite thing ever, when people who don't know each other can find each other through me and my music. I think that's the best.
Mm-hmm.
So So that was really fun. And, yeah, it lasted for a week, and it was really cool. I didn't have, like, a ton of entries, but I had enough to make it worthwhile, and it's definitely something that I would totally do again.
How did you, like, the technical aspect of it, you mentioned that people would just tweet it back to you, so you would get they would send you an image link, I'm assuming, and
yeah,
you would go to that link and then get the photo?
Mm-hmm. And then I uploaded all the photos to a Flickr account so that people could go look at all the pictures that were uploaded or sent to me. It was really cool. That was also, though, back before this time when Twitter changed the way they do at replies.
That's true.
Do you know about that?
Yes.
Starts with an at reply? Yeah. So I would have to come up with a different way to do it now, like maybe have a hashtag that people include in the tweet. Just because I think one of the things that's really important with those types of contests is that people following those fans see that they're entering the contest, so then they're curious, and they're like, well, who is this Allison Weiss girl having this contest? I'm going to go look at her Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe they find it interesting, and then maybe they follow me and listen to my music or something like that.
Yeah, each day, how would you were just personally selecting the winner, or did you take feedback from the other people following along with the contest?
I just personally selected the winner, which is cool because over the first, like after the first couple of days, people sort of understood what things I liked more than others.
Mm-hmm.
So then the pictures got funnier and more creative and stuff like that, and so that was fun.
And you said you were using download cards as giveaways. So you would just select the winners and send them off a download card, or did you just have them tweet their information to you? Or
yeah, I actually set up an email address specifically for it. It's like Twitter at AllisonW.com or something, so that people can send me their address. And now I use that for any other Twitter contest I have.
Have you done any other? Oh, go ahead.
Yes, I have done other Twitter contests. I know that's what you're just asking. I did this one contest while I was recording my album where every day in the studio I had a contest to come up with an album title, except it wasn't a real album title contest because it was more fun if people came up with crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the beginning of the day, I would be like, day 8 at Courtright Recordings, you know, send your entry for the album title game. And there was a hashtag, and it was #WeissAlbum. And so I would get all sorts of these tweets while I was in the studio. They were really fun, you know, and they were crazy. Like, Allison Weiss, the temperature at which hearts burn. That was one of my favorites. It's also like Allison Weiss, welcome to Babe City. And so it was really cool because since it was a hashtag-based contest, then people could go see all the other entries.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I would do is at the next morning, I would post the winner who would get a CD a download card, and then I would post like whatever runners-up I thought were hilarious as well. I would post those all on my blog. Which drove traffic from Twitter to my blog and also from my blog to Twitter. So that was really cool. And I think that was my favorite contest so far because I participated in it as well. Because, you know, there's always those moments where crazy things happen in the studio and then you're like, we should call the album that.
Yes, they do happen.
Yeah.
So besides Twitter, I've seen you doing some creative things with video as well, which I've definitely been encouraging artists to get into more, especially artists, again, that are in the situation that can't tour a lot. YouTube, I think, is still kind of underutilized by the average artist, and even though many artists are doing some cool things with it, but with the amount of people on YouTube and watching videos there, I think it's something that more artists need to be involved with. What are some of the things that you've done with video?
I love YouTube for figuring out if new songs are good or not. Sometimes I'll write a song and then, like, within 15 minutes of writing it, I'll post a YouTube video of it and be like, hey, guys, new song, what do you think? And then I get lots of comments that are encouraging, and so it makes me excited. Another good way to use YouTube is to post cover songs because for some reason people love to look up acoustic covers of popular songs. And there's probably like 3 that I've done that have really resulted in a lot of people finding my music and really liking it. Like, I still get MySpace messages from people who are like, I saw this video that you did of a Bright Eyes song, and then it led me to your MySpace, and I love your music, and I bought all your CDs, and I'm like, wow, I recorded that song in 2005. I hope that you realize how much better I've gotten since then. But that's really cool. I think that's a good way to use YouTube. Also, with things like the iPhone that takes video these days, it's really easy to post to YouTube from the road, which I think is really important. I love making tour videos, and in the past I've done it like after the tour and then posted them online, but now I try and do it during the tour as much as I possibly can. There's also really cool, like, little, those flip video cameras are awesome. I brought one of those on my last tour. It made it really easy to document the whole thing. I went on a Pacific Northwest tour, actually, up in Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, and my friend who I was with, we did these breakfast updates where we would just film ourselves eating whatever breakfast it was that day. We would talk about the breakfast, and then we would talk about our show that was that night, and then we would post it online. And people loved these things. They were really excited, and it actually, like, it brought people to some of the shows, and they're still, now every time me and this other musician hang out, people will send us messages on Twitter that are like, we better be getting a breakfast update, and it's really fun.
Well, that's cool, and I know you're a big pancake connoisseur.
I am.
So I'm sure there was pancakes at many of the meals.
Yeah, there definitely were.
You talked about some of your touring. Kind of wanted to wrap up with some of this because you are a true DIY artist at this point. You're doing everything yourself, and you've been doing quite a bit of traveling for somebody who's just booking everything on their own. How are you getting gigs all the way up in the Northwest and doing quite a few shows on the East Coast just on your own?
The Northwest thing was just, I decided I wanted to go visit that area, play some shows while I was there, and so I just kind of made it happen and emailed people, and we only played probably like 5 shows while we were up there, but I guess I was able to convince the venues that it was worth it to bring me there, so that was really fun. Actually, since we last talked, I've actually got someone now who's helping me with booking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a friend of mine who's in another band, and I don't know if I mentioned this yet, but I'm also a graphic designer. And so I'm trading him and his band graphic design for their MySpace in exchange for, like, them booking me shows,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool. Because now I play out of town, like, every weekend. I go somewhere in the Southeast, like, in a little market. I'm trying to attack the region. And I also play a lot up in New York because I plan to move there in about a year. And so I play up there every time that I can. I'm not sure exactly what, like, a good answer to how I'm getting all these shows is. I think it's just persistence and having a good, like, bio and press kit, something that will show the venues that you are legit and you are, you know, good and you're going to promote and you're going to bring as many people out as you can. It also helps a lot to trade shows with other bands in the other cities, or at least just get on a show with another band. I mean, you don't even necessarily have to trade if it doesn't make sense, if they're too far away. But definitely, like, getting with a good local band and just being the opener can totally help out.
Yes, and we talk about that on a regular basis on the podcast. Just, you know, I think it's important for artists to think about what they can do by, or what they can gain by getting on a bill with a artist that has a much larger audience. And sometimes it stinks being the opener, but sometimes it's the best way to increase your audience, especially out of town.
Yeah, definitely. I've been doing that thing. I think I got this idea from listening to the podcast, but I've been doing that thing where on stage I'll, like, announce that I'm having a contest, and the contest is put your name on the mailing list and you can win a CD at the end of the show.
That's cool.
And then I pass it out, and it always works, and I get so many names on my mailing list, so thanks for that tip. I'm pretty sure I got it.
How are you selecting the winner?
Oh, I don't tell them how I'm going to select the winner, and then right before the last time, I'm like, okay, this is how we're going to do this. You're going to yell at a number between, you know, like 15 and 35, whatever the first and last ones were, and then I made people yell it at the count of 3. And it usually works pretty well because people end up yelling prematurely, and then I can kind of, like, make fun of them, and then everyone has a good laugh together. Or, like, people will yell numbers that are not included in those 2 digits, and so it's usually really fun too. And the people who win are excited and stuff. So
that's a good idea. Do you have any mistake stories or words of advice you'd like to share?
I feel like I had a good mistake story last time, but then I didn't. I don't remember what it is now. I think it was probably I went on this one tour where I didn't promote it at all. It was like, I guess back in 2005, the first tour I ever went on. I was very excited. I'm going to go on tour. So I booked all these little shows at, like, coffee shops and stuff. And you know, not many people came out to the show. Maybe it wasn't because I didn't promote. Maybe it was just because it was early on in my music career. But I think that forgetting to promote shows is a really, really terrible mistake that can often happen if you're really busy and you've got other stuff going on. But luckily I found ways recently to be better at promotion without having to do so much work. Like, I don't know if you've heard of this website called artistdata.com.
Yes, I have, yeah.
I just joined that today. It's so awesome. It, like, puts my shows on multiple websites, and apparently it's even got something where it'll, like, email local press people. I'm interested to see if it actually works, but it's definitely, like, taking some of the work away from the whole internet update,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. But, I mean...
How are you managing all your tasks that you're doing since... You mentioned that you do have someone helping you book a little bit, but as far as everything else, being a solo artist, you don't have other people to hand off tasks to. So how do you keep everything going and be a college student at the same time?
I have a really long to-do list. It always has at least 10 unchecked things on it. But, I mean, I try and focus on the ones that I think are going to be the most effective. Like, right now, unfortunately, MySpace, people still use it a lot. But I don't know if you noticed this, MySpace changed their event invite section. And it's now really super easy to just invite people by the region that they live in,
mm-hmm.
which is great. Facebook, of course, everyone's on Facebook. Sending out Facebook invites is really important. I've started putting all of my friends into groups, and so I have a group for every state in the United States, and so I can invite people by state if I'm in that state. Gosh, I don't know how to keep track of it all.
Well, we'll keep watching and see what you come up with next. I know that a lot of people will probably start following you, and you've had good advice. So it's definitely interesting perspective. And especially, you know, when I was talking about the beginning where, you know, artists that are still thinking about A&R people and labels, it just kind of surprises me that, you know, there's still artists out there like that, but then there's artists like yourself who are like, you know, I'm just going to do it myself because no one's going to do it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like I know exactly what I want, and I feel like it would be hard for me right now to find someone who knows exactly what I want, because the last thing I ever want to do is give up any kind of control over what I'm doing, because I really, really believe that I'm doing it right.
Yep. And well, you know, you've got your fans backing you and helping finance your album. So what more could you ask for?
I know, right? It's amazing. One thing that I didn't mention that I don't know if you want to include this as well is I've been doing live streams, which I was doing. And then I saw that you guys had you had Matthew Ebel on, who is doing a lot of live stream stuff. But I found that to be really awesome. I've live streamed a few concerts from, like, remote, when they've had Wi-Fi. I've just set up my computer, mm-hmm. pointed it at the stage, and people have really liked that. And I actually have a TV channel on livestream.com. It's AllisonWeiss.tv. And when I'm not playing a stream show there, you can go and watch a loop of, like, interviews and music videos and people doing covers of my songs and stuff like that.
That's cool. So you said it was at livestream.com?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. Yeah, I think the live streaming, just letting people stream your shows from the internet on a live basis is going to be a big deal in the future. I think we've just started to scratch the surface of that, and there's going to be some really cool things happen because of it.
Definitely.
Well, thank you, Allison.
Yeah, totally.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. We have a roundtable discussion coming up for our next episode, so get your thoughts and comments in. And I'd especially like to hear if you've tried any online contests or promotions like Allison has been doing. Is it working for you? Did you encounter some unexpected problems? Do you have any tips or suggestions to share? There are several ways to get back to us with your feedback. First off, we love getting your calls and using them on the show. So feel free to call our listener line at 206-426-5683. You can also email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. Or if you're at our website, which is just cdbabypodcast.com, you can leave a comment in the show notes for each episode. And we love hearing from you. So please do that and join in on the conversation. That's it for now. See you next time. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.